Welcome to the City Point Church podcast. Thanks for joining us. Every day is an opportunity to take hold of. So we hope this message inspires you and builds your faith, that it helps you have more of a God perspective for your day. Enjoy.
Sitting in a cafe by the river, that's where our journey started. A 12-year-old girl saying, my friend, 10. Tonight, mother and father sell. Two men. Can you help? The She Rescue Home, a safe haven for girls under 16 who have been trafficked, prostituted, raped or are at risk, is celebrating 10 years of helping young girls in Cambodia. Ten years ago, the challenge of opening a home seemed overwhelming, but to succumb to the enormity of the problem is to fail the one. The very words we stand upon and the heart cry of our organisation, to help the one. In our first year, we had 14 girls in our care, and since that time, we have had over 80 girls come into our home. These girls' journey is only just beginning when they enter our home. We work diligently to see their lives full of life and work towards a flourishing and completely restored life for every survivor. While in our home, every young girl is provided access to medical care, education, counselling, family support, and taught healthy coping mechanisms to heal from and overcome the pain of past trauma. We love to overwhelm every girl in our care with food, fun, laughter, games, and love. Our goal for every survivor in our care is to be safely reintegrated back into her family and community. In 2009, we celebrated the success of reintegrating our first survivor. Over the years, we have provided business loans for family business, offered financial planning services for families, built wells for fresh water so girls aren't walking alone to the river, built toilets and bathing areas inside homes so girls can remain safe and reclaim a sense of dignity and privacy, and even built entire homes in new communities in order to relocate families to safety. Not only do we support physical needs, but we continue to support every girl for a minimum of 3 years following her reintegration, providing social work and counselling support, as well as covering all educational expenses. We learned very early on that the biggest vulnerability for girls to be trafficked in our world today is poverty. To combat this visible injustice, we dreamt of employing families from the safety of their homes where they may remain with their children and achieve financial sustainability in a dignified manner. With this dream, our family assistance program was born. What began with two simple handmade products 10 years ago has evolved into 70 different products, custom orders, a retail brand, and partnerships around the world. With the rapid growth of our family assistance program, in 2016 we were able to open our She Sewing Centre. This program is not only employing some of our very own reintegrated survivors, but is reaching and transforming communities with great impact all across Cambodia's capital city. To all our supporters of the past 10 years, we want to say thank you. Your support has not only healed the one, but has equipped and empowered her to join us in the fight against human trafficking, so that with one voice, we may powerfully declare, it's not okay. Join her in the fight against human trafficking.
And this is the reason we're here today. We're so excited to be unpacking She Rescue and everything about it this morning so that it is captured in the hearts of each and every one of us. And when it's caught in the hearts of every one of us, we can do something really great in this area. So it is my privilege and my honour this morning to spend some time unpacking She Rescue with Pastor Janet Wishart from our Brisbane location and her gorgeous daughter Molly. Molly, how old are you?
I'm just 14.
14 and sitting on a platform this morning. You're never too young to get involved in the mission of She Rescue, and it's very powerful. We're going to bring that out very, very soon. But we're going to jump straight into this because there's a lot to unpack. And so, Pastor Janet, you've actually spent the last number of years heading over to our She Rescue home and taking girl tours over to Cambodia, lots of different types of girl groups. But can you tell us about your very first Cambodia trip and why you took that trip?
Yeah, look, that was, I think, 6 or 7 years ago now. And realistically, I'd known about It's Not Okay, and she, from the moment I'd walked in to City Point, it is part of our heartbeat, it's part of who we are. And once I came on staff, Pastor Lee would share off with us often and was going over and backwards, so I'd hear a lot of the stories. And up until that time, my husband and I had felt that the best way to support it really was just financially and to go to the fundraisers and be a part of doing here. And then it really sort of started to stir within me that, you know, just like I'm here with you, you're a part of our family. The girls in Cambodia are a part of our family. They are a part of City Point. And I wanted to go because I not only wanted to meet the girls and see the work, but I had a lot of questions about how in a modern day society, human trafficking, slavery, child trafficking, how could that exist in our world today? It didn't make sense to me living in Australia where I live. So it was time to get on a plane, go and meet the girls, see what we do, ask the questions, came back with more questions than answers. But that was my first trip. And I've been back at least once a year. I've been 3 times this year. I really miss it, actually, watching that. I said to Molly in the first service, let's go this week. Should we just go? Don't worry about exams. Don't worry about son graduating, let's just go to Cambodia. It's in my heart now.
Well, Molly, you have actually just taken your first trip to Cambodia at 13 years old, is that correct?
Yeah.
13. And I'm sure that you would have, pre your trip, had a lot unpacked from Mum and her experiences. But what was different and surprising to you when you took your trip?
What definitely surprised me was the culture over there compared to here. Like, because we're so fair-skinned. I remember walking out of the airport, all eyes were just staring at us, and it was very different from here, because here you can just walk around and not have people staring at you all the time. But that was very different. Also, the heat, it was so intense. So you'd be inside, you'd be in the aircon, you walk out, and you'd be like, whoa, it's so hot. You could have prepared me more for that.
No, and I did take her at the hottest time of the year, where it's generally 40 degrees and 60% humidity. So it literally, you walk outside and you sweat and wilt straight at once, and all of the lovely smells that come with that heat. Hey, Molly.
You spoke in the early service a little bit about how it impacted you when you saw how the young girls were living in the nation. Can you unpack a little bit about that?
Well, it's very different over there. So people are just living on the streets over there, everywhere. But what I mostly remember is little kids. I would see them on the streets and I would think they have such a rough life. But they would just be so happy, they'd be so joyful, just playing around, playing with each other. And made me think, just because they're living a tougher life than I, doesn't mean that they can't be as happy and joyful as I am here. So it really taught me that over here, we're so blessed, but we take it for granted sometimes. So we just need to bring that back down and remember where we are and what we're blessed with.
Wow. Wow. Well, this is a question. I'm going to ask Molly a question that when I took my trip about 5-6 years ago was the first thing I asked the person touring us. And I'm sure many of you would like to ask whether you take a trip or you don't. Molly, what are the girls in the She Rescue Home like?
Well, they're just ordinary people like you and me, except that they've had different circumstances. So they all have, each individual girl has their own story, so they've all gone through something different. But they all still have that same happiness, and they just keep on striving through life and keep on looking forward towards the future, towards their hope and their dreams. Because I remember playing soccer with them, they were very competitive, very. But there was this one girl who was about 13 or 12, and she wasn't playing with us. And I was wondering why. And I found out later that was because she had a C-section earlier that week. So she had her baby. And it made me realize that I was around that age. And that could have been me if I lived over there. But it made it so surreal.
Yeah, wow. That really makes it sink into home, doesn't it? One of the most impacting things that I love about She Rescue is the way that we don't just support girls who have been pulled out of or rescued from these sorts of circumstances. It's actually the way we are able to partner with their families, because the ultimate goal for She Rescue is that we would actually be able to reintegrate our girls in a whole and healthy state back into Cambodian society, because these girls will be armed and ready to change the next generation of this nation. And so, Janet, would you just unpack for us a little bit about your experience about going into the homes of reintegrated girls.
Yeah, and I love what you said there, Mel, because realistically this is such an important part of the long-term goal of It's Not Okay and the She Rescue Home. 10 years ago when we went in, it was a very different Cambodia to even what it is now, even 12 months ago. It is a completely different Cambodia. And in many ways, if you go to Cambodia now, you'll see the Mercedes-Benz and the BMWs and huge amounts of infrastructure and huge amounts of building. But the reality is the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, and there's a great divide, and there's also a great facade of what's actually happening there from and where it's coming from. Some of the governments that are actually pouring money into that country. And so it can seem that Cambodia is recovering very, very quickly, but underlying that is still a huge number of people living in poverty, which is where the number one risks for a lot of our girls come from, is being at risk because they are living in such dire financial circumstances. So each one of these girls that come into our home, as Pastor Mel said, come in, and we have a restoration and a reintegration policy, which is we don't rescue the girls, we receive them once they're rescued, but then we have a holistic care. As you'll see up there, we provide for them education, mental health care counselling, we provide trauma counselling, we provide physical health, and often the girls have got a lot of physical problems that come with that, particularly if they have been raped or prostituted. You know, these are very young bodies put through a lot of trauma. So we provide medical support. But also a part of that is family support, looking at how this girl came into this situation and what needs to be done in order to reintegrate them. For a lot of the girls, that is possible. For some girls, it's sadly not possible. So we look at their long-term future, how we can create a hope and a future for each individual girl. So going into those girls' homes who have actually been reintegrated back with their family, you know, it doesn't just change a girl's life. It can change a family's life, which then creates a community change, which then creates a regional change, which then in a ripple effect and down the track will create a change within a culture and a country. So each individual family visit for me is quite impactful, because you see this ripple effect of how focusing on one girl and what that means for that community. Often when we go in with the team, just a practical thing, we take a bag of rice that will feed them for a month. One bag of rice will feed them for a month. You know, can you imagine not wondering where the food for the next month? I mean, some of you may have had financial situations, but we do have a lot of help here in our community, and we do have a government program where there is help. There is nothing in Cambodia. You don't go to Centrelink. You don't go to the government. It is a corrupt government. So there is literally no way of providing hope for these families. So a family visit, particularly if they're a part of our family assistance program, which I'm going to talk to you a little bit about, by which we've actually been able to partner with the girls. We don't get the girls working. That would be called child slavery. We actually work at educating the girls and training them up with a skill so that they can have an income. But a lot of the families we train up, they actually make the clothes that I'm wearing, the armbands, everything that you've got out there is a part of our family assistance program. So to see the product here and go over there and see them sitting in a home making it so that they can alleviate poverty from their community, so that not just that one girl but all of the girls in that community have a hope and a future. I mean, how do you put that into words, really?
I had the opportunity to do a family visit when we were over there in a village that was quite remote. And we came upon the family who were sewing the hearts, which was just so exciting. And that was really easy for me, because our Christmas tree that year was then full of hearts made by the family that I'd had the experience of touching base making these. And this helps this family live. It helps them eat. It's has actually changed their community, because they've become quite pinnacle in their community because they're a small business in their community. It was just so exciting, which is really, really awesome to see. Please go and see Fiona. Fiona, give us a wave this morning. Fiona has all of our incredible She Rescue merchandise in our stall that's in our cafe today. Don't head out our doors without going and visiting it. It's just absolutely beautiful. Well, girls and their mums do different experiences together all the time. Annie and I have special things we do together. We love to pedicure together. It's the thing we do every school holidays. We go and pedi together, and your experience is a really different experience of what you do with your mum. So, Molly, you didn't choose the petty, you chose to go to Cambodia with your mum. Now, how was that experience doing it with your mum? What was that like?
Well, from all her previous trips, I had heard a lot about it, and I was really excited to go when I first heard out because I'd heard about it and I was like, I want to go there, I want to experience it. And so then when I got there, it was really different, but I'm really glad I went. And while we're over there, it was like very influential and I learned so much stuff. But we also had a lot of fun over there. Like, you couldn't put the toothbrushes under the water because it wasn't safe. But Carolina and Maya, they both put their toothbrushes under it so many times. So they had to get so many new toothbrushes. Luckily, I didn't do it.
And Carolina's treatment for that was to drink an entire bottle of mouthwash.
Yeah.
She thought she'd kill whatever had gone down. So the practicalities of going to Cambodia are very fun when you're there with teenagers. Some of the things that we can't do a lot, actually, but that was fun.
Yeah. It was also, like, I had so much fun, but it was also very impactful, and I'm really glad that I went with Mum and with Carolina and Maya, because having a friend there really helps. And having Mum there and Carolina, it just meant after each day we could just debrief what we went over, because I know that a lot went into it. Like, we would see so many things, we would hear so many things, and I just didn't know how to process it. And with Mum and Carolina there, it was just so good to let it all out, and they would help us go through it.
Yeah, wow. So I'm going to ask you, from that experience, did either of you experience culture shock when you went to Cambodia, Molly?
I definitely did. The heat was one of them. It was just so hot. But the two main ones was the killing fields and the red light district. So the killing fields is just because of the Pol Pot regime, which is where this guy called Pol Pot killed all the smart people, educational people, anyone who had wisdom, he killed them all. And so he put them all in mass graves. And I remember going to those killing fields and just walking around, and it made it so real. And because that's why Cambodia is so poor now, because they have no one to bring them up with the wisdom and the knowledge that they have. And there was this one tree. It was the tree where they killed the babies or the toddlers. And so they used to whack the babies' heads against it until they died in front of the mothers. And that just hit something real deep within me, because it meant that that could happen here. Like Maya's little siblings, that could have happened to them. But not a lot of people know about it. But I feel that more people should, so that we can make a difference over there to stop stuff like that. And the red light district, which is these streets. And so we were going down the street and we turned a corner and we just went down that street, and it's a street filled with all the brothels and all those places, and it was just like a sudden click, and it was right there, right in front of our faces. It was on one of the last nights, and it was so right there in our faces. Like, I saw this old man grab this young girl, and I was thinking, what if that was me or my friend or Maya? And it just made it so obvious and clear to me that we need to make a difference over there.
For you, Pastor Janet?
Yeah, culture shock is an unwrapping thing for me, as I've been over so many times, and definitely watching the girls have their first experiences over there. I think for me, the greatest culture shock is having an awareness of how Cambodia came to be in this situation. As I said, I went over there not being able to understand how in today's modern society we have a culture and a situation, not just in Cambodia, across the world. There's so many places. And coming from an Australian perspective where we have a lot of security, we have a lot of freedom, we have government benefits, how does a country end up like this? But as Molly said, to understand where they are now, we need to understand what happened to this country. And it started off, they were such an influential, strong, beautiful country. Until, to be honest, America dropped bombs on it at the end of the Vietnam War, and then from out of that rose up the Pol Pot regime, which became a genocide. Millions of people slaughtered over there. Anybody with education, anybody who had a threatening voice to the government was literally eradicated. And now we have an orphaned generation that has no sense of heritage, no sense of security. They've also been traumatized. They didn't know where their next meal was coming from. They didn't know if they would survive the day. So you have a a bigger understanding when you know where they have come from. Now they're in survival mode. As I said, education has been wiped out, so they don't have a lot of understanding. You have a corrupt government that's influenced by many other corrupt governments. And I think for me the culture shock is to realise that for a country to be in this position is all our responsibility. And it's not just their problem to fix. Their culture is a beautiful culture. The Khmer people are the most generous, beautiful, sweet-natured people. They have been literally, for lack of a better word, forgive me for using it, but their country has been raped. And now they're coming out of that trauma, trying to put their pieces back together. And from that perspective, the culture shock is an understanding of what we have as a responsibility to be a part of that. Yeah.
Wow. Many of us, even from this location, have taken trips ourselves. But for myself, a culture shock, that something I didn't realise I was going to walk over to, and part of it unaware of Cambodia's history, but really stood out to me, is that there was a lack of older people in Cambodia. It really stood out to me. I think in 10 days in country, I was able to lay eyes on three elderly people. And when I say three elderly people, these would be people maybe in their 60s, not older. And because it was so rare, I had to have conversations and find out how. Because the age of Cambodia when I went there is a very young nation. And it was somewhere between 30 and 40 years old. So it was mind-boggling to see somebody who was older there. And for most of those, they were people who had been able to flee the nation in this time and had returned home.
And can I just add there, Mel, I just want to point out one of the practicalities of that is that a lot of the young girls and young guys don't have a generation of parents who were taught how to be parents, which means they don't talk about things like physical development. They don't talk about sexual development. They don't know they don't speak about it either. It's also a very taboo subject. So you have a generation that is growing up that isn't aware of sexual health, isn't aware of what's actually even going on with their bodies. So that's just one practical aspect of how there's such a danger in that, because there's no information and they're not informed and educated to be able to make wise and good choices.
Well, it's what stood out to me, because what I could see the evidence of a nation without its wisdom, without the generations who'd gone before to pass on how-tos to the next generation. And so now what was happening is a cycle of poverty and a cycle of, if we had hours and hours, we could unpack the different things that Pol Pot brought out in mantras that he spoke over his nation to children, that it has become a way of life. And so without its wisdom, that was the hugest culture shock for me, because I saw how important it was for us to be in that nation re-educating, which is what we do with our young girls, how to live so that the next generation is armed with wisdom to pass it on, which is really massively important and why we're there doing it. So, Pastor Jenna, obviously you've done quite a number of trips and had many, many experiences over in Cambodia. Can you tell us about one of the most impacting moments you have had in one of your trips?
Yeah, there's so many of these ones. And I shared this one in the earlier service as well, and if time permits, I'll share another one. But it was actually this last trip, and can I just pause here and say, you know, I've got the privilege of being the mouthpiece today, but the real heroes are the house mums. The real heroes are the counsellors. The real heroes are the teachers over there, the ones who worked day in, day out with these girls who are up in the middle of the night when they're having night traumas. The real heroes are the team on the ground there, the team over here. Fiona is our Australian operations manager, has worked for It's Not Okay. Such a hero who gives her entire life for this organisation. And I have to have a shout out to Pastor Hillary and Pastor Lee Ramsey. Without them, none of this would happen. Hillary, the pocket rocket that lives, breathes, sleeps, eats, sweats, runs hard and fast to make this happen. And Pastor Lee and her were sitting on that waterfront on that first night when the 10 girls came over and said, my friend, had they come home and said, well, that was really sad, let's give some money to make that better, we wouldn't be sitting here without them today. Their tenacity. When they went over there, the first home, and Shreng is still our tuk-tuk driver over there, they tell the story that they carried every piece of furniture up 7 flights of stairs themselves for that first home to receive those girls. Those girls are heroes. Those women are heroes. The staff are heroes. I just really wanted to stop and acknowledge that, because we're just the privileged one to be able to speak to you, but they're the heroes in the story. And so many of the stories that come back over from Cambodia, some of the ones for me this last trip, I was probably not ready for this moment. I'd seen a lot, thought I'd seen pretty much most of it, had shared in our team training some of the experiences to try and have the girls ready. But this last time we went into one of the brothels, and I'll never forget, she was just over 1 year old, and she was in the brothel and was being fed alcohol on a spoon and then put up on the strip pole and made to dance around it. And surrounding her was a group of Western men who were there for their next fix and looking for a purchase. Her face, I don't like the word haunts me, because she was beautiful, and but that moment haunts me still. She reached her arms out to the team and I, just like any one-year-old would who wants to come into the arms of a place of safety. And she was swept up by the men and put back into the booth and continued to be their plaything. Moments like that, you can't describe. The team's response, which I'll share, which I didn't get to share in the first one, we have a mantle that every place where we place our feet, we claim. We claim that scripture that he will give us the ground where we place our feet. Mm-hmm. So they decided they were going to get up on the strip poles and they were going to declare the name of the Lord over every single strip pole in that house. And they were dancing, and I remember thinking as a team leader, I don't know whether to be excessively worried or excessively proud that I have a group of City Point girls dancing on strip poles in a brothel in Cambodia. But the great testimony of that is that 4 weeks later, often the girls we make friends with in the brothels, and some of them share Facebooks. And we got a message from one of the girls who was 16, and she messaged one of our team members a month later saying, I don't know what's changed, but I'm leaving. I can't stay here. That's the power of the name of Jesus in that place. And I remember being the next day in the home with those girls, and we had a little one in the home. She's one of our girls' little daughters who was born, and she's nearly 2 now. And I remember her putting her hands up for one of the house moms to give her a cuddle, and I went, that's the difference. When they put their arms up, we've given these girls a hope and a future and a safe place to be enveloped. So that was one of the most impactful play times, Molly.
And that was a trip after mine, so I didn't get to experience.
Yeah, no, that was a trip, and I didn't take my daughter into any brothels. I didn't. We drove through the red light district with Maya and Molly, but there is many things that I will protect my daughter from. And on that trip, also with Maya and Molly, there were several times where Carolina and I had to physically put our hands on our daughters, because there were 2 instances where some guys were following us and keeping an eye on our daughters. Had they gone from it, Carolina and I were ready to rip any parts of their bodies off. But, but the name of the Lord went before us, and we didn't have to.
Wow. Pastor Lee says this statement, which is the overarching statement for She Rescue. She says, to succumb to the enormity of the problem is to fail the one. Obviously, you've heard some stories this morning already that might be hard to process or digest, but that's the tension of it. Each and every one of us has a responsibility to do something now that we've heard. I love that the word says to us, he who has ears, let him hear. It is because we are actually supposed to catch it and do something with it. And in our services just 2 weeks ago, we unpacked the message, Own Your Eros. And I would love to encourage you to go back and go over that again. Hearing this message this morning as we unpack the mission of She Rescue, it's easy to point a finger or sit in a place of judgment for, as Pastor Janet brought out, the Western men who are there doing this. It's really easy to sit and go, that's disgusting, that shouldn't happen. They should, and of course you could fill in the blank of whatever they should there. But the truth is as we unpacked in that message 2 weeks ago, We each have to own our eros. We each have to take responsibility for where this began for these young men. And the truth is, for these Westerners, it started here in our nation. It started with what we allowed. It started with those little tiny seeds of what we texted or what we viewed or what we made accessible to our world. And as I unpacked, we tried it on and we practiced it out and we strengthened those muscles. The truth is for these men who travel across the world to, as Pastor Janet said, get their next fixed or make their next purchase, it began here. And so we as a church, or we as the body of Christ, have to take responsibility here for our next generation of men and women who may struggle in this area. Do you know that having it on our lips, not making it taboo, actually having authority when we speak, speaking it in love, this is actually how we take responsibility for both sides here in our nation, because the truth is we're on the ground in that nation helping what is happening right now, but we can deal with what's actually happening right at the very start with by getting involved in the next generation and raising incredibly integrous, godly men and women and making that the social norm. That's how we take responsibility. So can I encourage you, go back and listen to that message on Podbean. Today's will also be available on Podbean. All our messages are, get them in your spirit, own it. We need to take responsibility for these things in our nation, which is really exciting. So obviously with Pastor Lee's statement for She Rescue, there's a tension when we wrestle this out with some of the issues that you face when you go to Cambodia. Do you girls want to share a little bit about that?
For me, one of the issues was one time we were in the markets just going through and this guy came up to me and was begging to me. He was from the war and he was asking for money, like, buy this brochure, buy this book, buy it, buy it. And I had to say, no, no, thank you. And he just kept on following us saying, no, please buy it. And it was really hard for me to say no, because in my soul, I'm like, I don't like to say no to people. Like, if somebody asks me to buy something, I'll be like, no. But he kept on following me. And it just, like, I realized that we have to be wise with our money, where we place it, because I don't know if that money was actually going back to him or going back into organizations that make stuff happen to these girls. So I just had to be wise and say no, no. Just, you have to keep persisting and be really wise with what you do with your money.
Yeah, on that, over there, there's a lot of organisations that actually traffic people with disabilities or mothers with babies. So often over there, what appears on face value as an incredibly desperate situation, behind it is actually a trafficking ring who's shipped them in or transported them into an area. And so we said to the girls, you actually have to partner with the organisations who are on the ground, who are in country, knowing what they're doing. We can't actually trust that money is going to go to that poor gentleman. He's probably going to be, as soon as you leave, the trafficker will come and take whatever he gives. I think, you know, in questioning, you know, how to not succumb to the enormity of it, it is enormous, and it can be incredibly challenging to come back and see the multitudes of people in need, the number of people living on the streets, the number of children this time. I was last there. There seemed to be more children around the brothels and in the red light districts, and more children at risk. But the reality of it is as big as the enormity of the problem, our God is so much bigger. And as big as the issue of corruption is, we have a God who is a God of justice. And as much as there is despair and trauma, we have a God of restoration and of freedom and of hope. And so in order for us not to succumb to the enormity, we think of the one. And I remember every single one of those girls and those faces, and we always sit with them and we get to spend a lot of time with them, and they share their hopes and their dreams, and so many of them want to be hairdressers, and or some of them want to be lawyers, or some of them want to be sewers, and to see them and to see their stories, it's a beautiful story of redemption. And to be able to focus on, for that child, for that family, for that community, it made a difference, and that will have a ripple effect. Ten years in now, we're starting to see a next generation of girls who are empowered. One of our first girls who went through the home went to study law and is now involved in prosecuting and putting in the persecuting. Thank you. Those who need to be brought to justice in her own homeland. That's how you don't succumb to the enormity, because God has a plan and God is outworking his plan, and God has called us to be a part of his plan. As I said at the beginning, these are our girls. These girls are our City Point girls. This is our girl crew, our Cambodian girl crew. And we have a responsibility not to fail them, because you and I may not be able to sit in the courts of justice in Cambodia. You might not ever be able to sit before the king or the prime minister of Cambodia, but you have the opportunity to walk out the doors, purchase some product that will go into creating an income for a month or two or three or a year for a family. And that makes an enormous impact into that family. So how you don't succumb to the enormity of the problem is to know that there's also an enormous way that we can be a part of the answer to that problem. So that's...
Wow, phenomenal. Well, I have one final question for you, particularly Molly. You've been home for a couple of months now since your trip. How has your trip changed you? And what have you done since being home with now, this She mission that's in your heart?
Well, since coming home, I've become a lot more confident in who I am, because I know that the girls over there, they sometimes have to hide who they are so that nothing bad happens. But over here, we have the freedom. So I feel like we should just give it all to him and show our true self. And because I know that before I went, I would have been so much more nervous to come up here. But now that I've went, I know that saying and being up here actually makes a difference towards all of our lives and their lives. And since coming back, I've started a life group with some young girls in my school. And I know that when you train them up young, they become, like, they grow up to become great and leading nation leaders of young women. So, yeah.
Phenomenal. Isn't that incredible? When it's caught in the heart of the next generation. I love that you just said that I wouldn't have had the confidence to do this. You know, it's not a building of confidence that does this. It's actually catching the heart of what it's about that gives you the voice and the platform to be able to share it, which is just so exciting. Pastor Janet is about to unpack the how you get involved with this and how you partner with She Rescue. But we'd just like to thank both of them this morning for coming out and sharing the vision of She Rescue. Wait, could I get you to turn your attention to the screens just as we see this video?
ហើយពេលនោះគាត់មានអាយុ12ឆ្នាំគាត់មានទីពោះចិត្តដល់ពេលសម្រាលហើយតាមរយៈដោយសារតែការជួយដូរផ្លូវភេទឪពុកម្ដាយរបស់គាត់អាចបាននៅផ្ទះជាមួយគាត់ទេគឺទុកគាត់ចោលជាមួយនឹងយាយតាដែលពួកគាត់ចាស់ជរាមានជំងឺហើយក្រីក្រីពេលសុខាបានមកនៅស្នាក់នៅផ្ទះសង្គ្រោះនាងមួយរយៈពេលនាងបានសម្រាលកូនដោយមានសុខភាពល្អល្អទាំងម្ដាយទាំងកូនហើយបន្តមកនាងក៏បានចូលសាលារៀនក្រោយពីរៀនបានមួយរយៈពេលយើងកាត់សម្គាល់ឃើញថាសុខាគ ងថ្មីហើយនៅមានវ័យក្មេងតែសុខាបានយកចិត្តទុកដាក់ហើយមើលថែកូនបានល្អបន្តមកទៀតរហូតរបស់កូនរបស់គាត់មានអាយុ2ឆ្នាំគាត់ចាប់ផ្ដើមចង់ត្រឡប់ទៅនៅសហគមន៍វិញហើយគាត់ក៏ចង់រៀនជំនាញកាត់ដេរពួកយើងក៏បានបញ្ជូនរបស់ជូនគាត់ទៅរៀនកាត់ដេរនៅសាលារៀនខាងក្រៅបន្តមកទៀតគាត់ក៏បានរៀនហើយគាត់សប្បាយចិត្តនឹងការរៀនជំនាញរបស់គាត់ដែរចាក្រោយពីមានសំណុំពរហើយបានធ្វើផែនការសមរណកម្មពិភាក្សាជាមួយនឹងអាជ្ញាធរព្រមទាំងក្រុមគ្រួសារសុខាត្រូវបានសមរណកម្មជាមួយកូនរបស់នាងទៅសហគមន៍វិញឪពុកម្ដាយរបស់នាងបាន ស្នើសុំឲ្យចង់ឲ្យសុខារស់នៅឯករាជ្យជាម្ចាស់ការដោយខ្លួនឯងហើយសុខាជាអ្នកម្ដាយដែលនៅថ្មងថ្មីមិនអាចរស់នៅបែកកូនបានដូច្នេះហើយតាមរយៈមូលធិពីម្ចាស់ជំនួយដែលអាចឲ្យយើងផ្ដល់ផ្ទះរបស់នាងសាងសង់ផ្ទះឲ្យនាងរស់នៅជាមួយកូនរបស់នាងព្រមទាំងមានបន្ទប់ដេកតែនាងអាចប្រកបអាជីវកម្មនៅផ្ទះមើលថែកូនព្រមទាំងអាចរកម្ចាស់រកប្រាក់ចំណូលក្នុងការចិញ្ចឹមកូនរបស់នាងនៅសហគមន៍បានចា៎ហើយការដែលនាងអាចមានបន្ទប់ដេកកន្លែងផ្ទាល់ខ្លួនហើយរស់នៅជាម្ចាស់ការពិតជាសំខាន់សម្រាប់គាត់ក្នុងការមើលថែនិងរស់នៅជាមួយកូនរបស់គាត់ដោយឯករាជ្យហើយកូនរបស់គាត់គឺជាអំណោយហើយនឹងជាប្រពន្ធសម្រាប់ដែលផ្ដល់សេចក្តីសង្ឃឹមដល់អនាគតដែលមិនគិតពីអតីតភាពនៅក្នុងសង្គមកម្ពុជានៅពេលដែលស្ត្រីត្រូវបានរងគ្រោះដោយការជួញដូរតម្លៃរបស់នាងត្រូវបានធ្លាក់ចុះនិងត្រូវបានគេទាត់ចោលប៉ុន្តែតាមរយៈការឧបត្ថម្ភសុខានិងកូនរបស់នាងអាចរស់នៅហើយមានភាពឆ្លាតវៃនិងប្រសើរជាងមុនដោយនាងអាចទទួលយកភាពបាក់បែកនៃការស្ដារនៅភាពអមាសរបស់នាងតែជា
I love that last line. It's a beautiful new life. And you know, I was just thinking as I was watching that of a story, one more story I want to share with you. And it was a couple of trips ago, and we were actually out in one of the dumps actually, and we were going out to feed the families that live in the dumps. They're called pickers. And these pickers live in the dumps and they pick out of the rubbish anything that they think they might get money for. Generally, they get about 25 cents a month for what they pick out of the rubbish. And a lot of them live there with their families on the dump grounds. And I remember this one mother one night was incredibly distressed. She was just panicked. She's like, my daughter gone. And through the translator, she told us the story of how she had an 11-year-old daughter and she had an eight-month-old, and her eight-month-old became very, very sick, as you can imagine, living in that environment. And she needed some penicillin, she needed some antibiotics for the infection that her eight-month-old had. But when you live in Cambodia, there is no such thing as Medicare, there's no such thing as medical benefits. So she needed this medicine, which was going to cost a couple of dollars, but when you earn 25 cents a month, there was not a lot of chance for her to be able to afford that. And of course, the traffickers come into those sort of areas and exploit that situation. And one of them had said, oh, I have some girls, your daughter come take care of my girls and I give you the money for the medicine. Your daughter come play and help with my daughters and I take care of and I buy you the medicine. There was no instance that trafficker was going to, you know, exploit that girl. So the mother said, okay, and took the money. And that was the last time she had seen her daughter a couple of weeks ago. Because ultimately she thought that she would get the medicine, her daughter would go and take care of some girls and would come home, but she never came home because that man didn't have a family that he needed. He was a trafficker and we don't know where that girl ended up. And why I tell you that is because that's the sort of poverty that puts these girls at risk. No mother wants to sell her child, but they are forced into situations that we cannot begin to imagine. And so how you can help is you can help to alleviate that poverty. You can help by making a difference by the tins that are on your chairs. 25 cents they earn. 25 cents, how much for your coffee this morning? You know, what would that do for a family if you commit to putting maybe one coffee a week into that tin? Maybe just your spare change. Pop it in your business place. Pop it at your school. Kids, if you want to take them in and ask your school to be a part of fundraising, it is as simple as that. There's that. There's the incredible merch that goes into our family assistance program. There's sponsoring a child. There's trips you can take. Girls, come on the Girl Crew trip. Guys, get involved in one of our men's build trips. You saw some of the homes on the pictures there. Our men go into the local community and build shelters and houses for our families to live in. They build places where the girls can be safe at night with a locked door. Nothing flash, just a door with a lock on it. You guys can be a part of that. You can also pray because prayer changes a spiritual atmosphere. And as we saw from that story, by praying and declaring the name of Jesus into their life and into their nation, we make a difference. The other way you can do it is from here. As Pastor Mel said, and I love this, you're either going to be an advocate for change or a consumer of an industry that is actually feeding into that. Guys, what are you looking at? What are you doing? How are you speaking? How are you treating the females in your world? Girls, what are you doing to declare respect over yourself? It is about a climate and an atmosphere that we set here of what we will tolerate. There are many things here in Australia that are simply not okay itself. Let's be agents of change to say, whether it be in Cambodia, whether it be here, whether it's in my home, we will not take disrespect and exploitation and sexual exploitation anymore. In the local shopping centre, you know, write to those companies that have those incredibly pornographic images in their doorways. Sexual exploitation and sexual protection starts right here in our nation. Get involved in writing to your local member. Mandatory sex laws for sex offenders over here. You know, a lot of them can actually be persecuted over here, have a criminal record over here, and get on a plane with a passport and live in Cambodia and take their fill over there. The men over there are not, they just don't hide it. I can easily go up to any one of them and say, tell me about what you're here for, tell me what you like, and they will tell it. It's not something they hide. But if we can stop them getting on that plane, we can stop them exploiting a culture that is so vulnerable. You can do something. Please do not walk out of this place today and think, well, that was really, you know, that was tough to hear, and, you know, I'll pray for them. You can actually pray first and foremost, but also be hands and feet, because we are the body of Christ called to make a difference here in our local community, in our nation, and in the world. You know, but as I finish up today, I was thinking of my favorite verse in John 8 that says, he who is free indeed. He who the Son sets free is free indeed. And the name of Jesus brings freedom to that nation. The name of Jesus brings freedom from all sorts of oppression and trauma to each one of those girls. But I know some of you might have walked in the house today and you're like, you know, that's a really intense story, but I'm actually just trying to do the best I can in my life right now. And I hear you talking about this Jesus and this freedom. I don't actually know who he is and what he can do in my circumstance. And I'm here to say to you today, whether you've walked in here today and you've got your own trauma and your own circumstance, that God sees it and it matters. And just like those girls in Cambodia, he has a hope and a future for you. And he came 2,000 years ago so that those girls may have a hope and a future, but he came 2,000 years ago so that you, sitting here right now in this moment, can have a hope and a future and can have a shift and a change in your circumstances. All he needs you to do is to reach out like that little girl with hands out to him and say,